With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, and happy Tuesday.
What up, everyone? Welcome to the show. I can't believe it. I thought you were going to say it's like Wednesday or Thursday, but no, right. It's still Tuesday, and it's fine. It's fine. We're still making it.
Yes, and I can't believe it's the summer, because I don't even know what season it feels like anymore. I have no idea where we are.
My thing is obviously, and this is like some insight into the Channel Q fam, we're able to take a week off, right? And so
yes.
Expect that soon. We'll have some best of moments, some of your favorite, segments that have, like, interviews that we've played before. Cool, right? But my thing is, how are you supposed to take, like, a week-long vacation in the middle of a pandemic? What am I supposed to do? And I have Shira over here pressuring me because they want us to do it at the same time. And so if I don't make a decision, Shira can't really move. So I'm just going to make
a decision for both of us.
No, I hate that. So what are you supposed to do in the middle of a pandemic? We can't go anywhere.
Well, then just chill and take some time off and just, hang out at home or take a walk, go to the dog park, to the beach.
We're already doing that every single day.
No, but
we're in the house.
But without the timelines and the schedule, it's a bit more open-ended.
It's not. And I honestly hate it. I hate feeling pressure to take off of work. I am the type of person. I am the type of person who racks up on my vacation time. Like, I don't ever really take vacations. So it's weird. It's really weird.
I just want to see if Ryan says the same thing, and when he's a bit older, and
because I'm still going to be confused. I'm still going to be confused.
I wonder if you're going to be like, "Thank God, I am taking that time because you deserve it."
So what you're saying is, when you get older, you get more jaded, and you want to take more vacations and
not
just
jaded.
Relaxed.
Self care is real, and
you'll take the time off. Self care.
All right, let us know what you think about this and what a vacation means to you right now. And would you take one at LGT Show? Or you know both of our Instagrams at The Slay God, at Shira Lazar.
And Shira's not going to social distance, so yeah.
That is not true. You always say that.
Let's just end it
not
there.
Not fair. Now, coming up, we have details on the new coronavirus aid package that might be here soon. And a type of mask that we've all been told to use that might not work. So stay tuned for that conversation. But let's get into what's trending this hour. Now, President Trump is doing his daily White House briefings again. And today said that the administration is developing a strategy to take on COVID-19.
We are in the process of developing a strategy that's going to be very, very powerful. We've developed them as we go along. Some areas of our country are doing very well. Others are doing less well. It will probably, unfortunately, get worse before it gets better. Something I don't like saying about things, but that's the way it is. It's what we have. You look over the world, it's all over the world. And it tends to do that. The governors are working very, very hard. And we are supporting them 100%. Everything they need, they get. And we are taking good care. We have tremendous supplies and a great supply chain.
I mean, at least he's being honest that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Right? Well, he also mentioned that they've been dealing with this since February. So shouldn't we have had a strategy back then? It just feels now all of a sudden he sees it and it's just like, I guess we gotta work on this.
It's a bit open-ended, but hopefully there'll be something very soon. Let's just hope. Now, Republican lawmaker Representative Ted Yoho is getting called out after he challenged Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on issues of crime and policing in an unusual and unfortunately very personal way. They had a confrontation on the steps of Capitol Hill. So this is what went down. It was a very brief but heated exchange, and it was actually overheard by a reporter. So I wonder if this had happened and there was no reporter there, I guess she would have never known what he thought about her. So Yoho told AOC she was disgusting for recently suggesting that poverty and unemployment are driving a spike in crime in New York City during the pandemic. Then the two parted ways. AOC went into the building while Yoho, joined by Representative Roger Williams, continued walking and said, effing B word.
Wow.
And yeah.
Disgusting. Clearly shows that they have no respect for women. Their colleagues in that building, because to call her that, dude, you might need to go to therapy and figure out your anger issues.
Right. She has said that that kind of confrontation hasn't ever happened to me.
I bet. It's disgusting.
We're moving into the Tea Report. What's up?
All right, so here are some pop culture stories that are trending. Here's an update on Tamar Braxton. You know, she was actually reported that she had a suicide attempt, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But she is awake and alert. Sources are talking to The Blast saying she's stable and is discussing her situation, the dates leading up to the hospitalization with doctors. Now, Tamar has been transferred to another facility for further evaluation and treatment. They added, the outpouring of support that Tamar has received is a testament to the light that she brings to people, which is really good to hear that she's doing much better. Now, Kanye West, speaking of kind of mental breakdowns, unfortunately, and that might be a terrible transition, but Kanye West had a moment where he was ranting all over social media last night. Here are a few tweets. He said that Kim Kardashian tried to lock him up during a bizarre rant on Twitter. He said, Kim tried to bring a doctor to lock me up with a doctor. If I get locked up like Mandela, y'all know why. He even said, Chris, don't play with me. You and that Kanye are not allowed around my children. Y'all tried to lock me up. He even then tries to relate his life to the movie Get Out, saying that, you know, that movie Get Out is about me. But Dave Chappelle, actually, this morning, Kanye West tweeted out a video that Dave Chappelle hopped on a jet to come see him and to make sure that he's doing well on his ranch. But that is the pop culture stories that are trending right now.
All right. Now, coming up, many COVID relief programs come to an end this month. We break down if and when another round of aid could be coming. That's coming up in 10 minutes. President Donald Trump and Republican congressional leaders met yesterday to figure out another round of federal coronavirus aid. We've been waiting for this, haven't we? And it's going to decide the future of more unemployment payments and assistance to schools reopening in the fall. What does this all mean and what are the plans actually? Washington Post political reporter Amber Phillips is back with us. Thanks for being here.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
So where do we stand on another round of stimulus checks? Everyone is wondering this.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say that's the one area of agreement on this coronavirus package is that leaders in both parties, as well as the White House, agree that there needs to be some kind of cash infusion to Americans. The number floating around the Capitol Hill is $1,200, like it was last time. Although there's some talk among Republicans specifically of maybe lowering that, to people who earn. Again, these numbers could change drastically, so caveat that. But lowering that to people who earn $75,000 or less, or maybe it's a little less than $1,200, they're still figuring that out. But then there are like lots of other proposals, specifically one major one by President Trump that could put a hiccup into the stimulus checks. Specifically, the president wants to give a break to Americans on their payroll taxes. Mm-hmm. Those are the taxes that come out of Americans' paychecks to fund Social Security and the Medicare. And so if they did that, I would have a hard time seeing Republicans also agreeing to stimulus checks because they're very concerned about the cost of it.
Well, I mean, the administration is saying that this next aid should focus on kids, jobs, and vaccine. So, what does that even mean? Because that feels very vague.
Sure. Well, in terms of, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that because when I look at their wish list, you know, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McKinney was out today talking about what they want. Mm-hmm. It's specifically focused on jobs, the payroll tax cut That's what President Trump thinks would help best, although it has widespread opposition in Congress because Republicans and Democrats say, well, you only get that if you're employed. Like, how does that help create jobs? And then would Americans have to pay that back? In a couple months or a year when things stabilize, can Americans afford that at that time? Could Congress afford to forgive those paycheck tax cuts? I don't know. That's all up in the air. So there's lots of pushback on that. In terms of kids, I have not heard him focus on, you know, some of the childcare issues that former Vice President Joe Biden is talking about. But we know that President Trump wants kids to be in school in the fall. He's still do that. Despite health experts, even in his own government, warning that may not be the best decision for many people. Republicans, though, are kind of leaning toward forcing schools to open their doors to some degree by saying, okay, we're going to give you money in this coronavirus package only if you open your schools.
Wow, seems not manipulative at all. All right, Washington Post political reporter Amber Phillips is with us right now as we talk about this next coronavirus aid package that Republicans have been discussing this week, actually. So is there a timeline on this? I mean, at this point, they still need Democrats to approve this, or is it just based on what Trump wants to do?
Well, yeah, they need Democrats, you're right, to pass this. This cannot be done just with Republicans. Democrats control an entire chamber of commerce, of Congress and the House, and they can block the bill in the Senate. So a bunch of people are meeting with a bunch of people today on Capitol Hill, like the White House is meeting with House Republicans and House Democrats, and Senate Republicans are meeting with Senate Democrats and the White House. And their timeline, ideally, according to the White House, is to have a bill done, not voted on, by the end of this week. That would be super fast.
Yeah,
I could see something done, right? Eyebrows raised. I could see something done the next 3 weeks, because after that, the plan in Congress is to go home and let everyone campaign for November.
And Amber, I want to quickly go back to the unemployment situation that's happening. Are they considering strategic steps to help people that were laid off to get rehired? Is that even going to be possible with a lot of these businesses having to play catch up as well?
So far, the only major policy proposal both sides are talking about on unemployment is to continue to supplement states' unemployment funds. Congress gave a very generous unemployment benefit last time around that totaled $600 a week on top of whatever you could get from your state.
Yeah.
This time, Republicans really want to lower that. I don't see Democrats drawing a red line there. But beyond that, I don't hear a lot of talk about how you rehire people. I know Congress wants to give small businesses more loans, and they're hoping that would help people get back to work. But how do you do that in states like they're hit hard by coronavirus and closing bars and restaurants and threatening to shut down even further? Like, those loans wouldn't really help in that case, get people back to work.
And what about the news about the White House blocking billions of dollars for coronavirus testing and tracing impacts? Like, how will that impact this new bill as well? Or is it two separate things?
No, that is a major part of this legislation. Republicans are the ones who are really mad about that, because they say, listen, we're hearing from our governors, red state governors, Republican governors are hit hardest by the virus now. They do not have the testing capabilities to keep up with this virus. People find out a week afterward. That just defeats the whole purpose of testing and trying to contain it. And they were really surprised to hear the administration say, no, we think there's enough money. So that's a huge sticking point. Just between Republicans and Republicans, they have to get over before they can even negotiate with Democrats, who want even more money for testing and healthcare workers and contract tracing than Republicans.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is really reassuring. stick around with us, though, because Washington Post political reporter Amber Phillips will be joining us for our next conversation around Joe Biden's huge plan that he unveiled today for child and elder care. But where does he plan to get all that money? That's next in 10 minutes. Former VP Joe Biden unveiled his new plan today, $775 billion over 10 years that would help American families care for each other from child care to elder care. And it's called the 21st Century Caregiving and Education Workforce. Here he is speaking about it today.
Well, reinforcing my absolute determination that I've been pushing for over 2 years to triple the amount of money for Title I schools in those districts like this one, where every child every child in Title I district is able to have the benefits of an education at 3 and 4 years of age. That's why I couldn't think of a better place to talk about the third plank of my Build Back Better plan for the economy. This is about easing the squeeze on working families who are raising their kids and caring for aged loved ones at the same time.
And joining us again is Washington Post reporter, political reporter specifically, Amber Phillips. Welcome back.
Hi there.
So let's break this down. What does Biden's plan intend to do? And has there been something like this before?
No, this is a big wish list for Democrats, progressives, and centrists that he's putting out there. The big thing that would just be a huge change in America. I'm the mother of a young kid. It would just be a huge change is universal pre-K. Like only like 3 or 4 states and maybe in a couple cities offer this in America. And so he would fund that he has a plan for how to fund that with taxes, specifically rolling back President Trump's tax cuts that they passed a couple of years ago. Listen, that's not going to happen unless you get a Democratic Congress. Like, Republicans in the Senate could block that easily. The next thing he wants to do, he wants to create more jobs for healthcare workers. Maybe there's more bipartisan agreement on that. And then there's also a focus on giving a tax credit to people who are informal caregivers, say, you know, your mother-in-law who's elderly moved in with you. Maybe you don't have money for a nursing home or want to send them there. He wants to give people, I think it's up to $5,000 a year in a tax credit for doing that and acknowledging that as a job.
So is this considered a lot of money for a plan like this? Because I know when it came to like conversations around the possibility of even like removing student loan debt, people described that as impossible or out of reach. Would they say the same about this?
Yes. Well, I will say that, you know, looking at the proposals that Biden has put out there, that would cost money. Climate change is by far the most expensive. He wants to spend $2 trillion to try to focus on eliminating carbon pollution, specifically from power plants over the next couple of years. But this is pretty expensive. I mean, this is, so to put this in perspective, Congress is trying to pass a bill on coronavirus stimulus that's like $1 to $3 trillion. And that's one of the largest economic aid bills in U.S. history, unless you count the other coronavirus bills they passed. It's just, it's historic in terms of how much it would cost. This bill would cost $775 billion, so a little less than that, but he'd space it out over 10 years. That's still pretty expensive. And again, it would have to be paid for by making some decisions that I don't see Republicans in particular and maybe some moderate Democrats going along with.
Yeah. Again, Washington Post political reporter Amber Phillips joins us right now as we talk about this new plan that Biden has to help with childcare and in-home elder care. Yeah. I think a big question is, where does this money come from? Like all these proposals you can throw out like, oh, this would cost this and this sounds really good and promising, but how much can we be excited about this if it's not even realistic?
Right. So on that front, Biden has tried to say, here's this plan that sounds great, polls really well. Also, I have an idea for how to pay for it. He's taken, real efforts to try to say that on all the plans he's proposed. But again, would something like this be able to pass Congress? I'm doubtful unless he has a totally Democratic-controlled Congress, which is possible, by the way.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, it would be funded in part by rolling back tax breaks for real estate investors. So those are the two major things he's talked about. Those, you know, pull pretty well. Like there is this populist energy in America on both sides of the political spectrum to tax the rich. I don't think anyone is out there, you know, lobbying for real estate investors besides real estate investors.
Right.
But I think when you try to get Congress to sign off on something like this, it gets a little more difficult because there's always a constituency that's going to be taxed more as a result and not necessarily see the benefit.
And I know, obviously, the pandemic is on a lot of people's minds, and even for parents, kids going back to school and childcare. But I do wonder, I feel like one thing that Biden is struggling with is trying to come up with something that keeps him in the forefront of everyone right now. And so is this something that he should be focusing on? And ultimately, will this resonate with voters?
Yeah, I think that's right. Ryan, an assessment of his strategy right now, which is to say, I know we're all focused on the pandemic, but look what I could do for you if I were president. Look ahead. to life outside the pandemic and how I would, you know, change your life for the better. I think it is smart to hear him talk about this politically, because what he's trying to do is leverage his ability as a politician to come across as this working class guy. He comes from the Rust Belt. We know he struggled with finances. My colleagues at the Post have reported, well, even in the White House, as his son got sick with brain cancer. You know, I think his campaign, in addition to thinking this is good policy, is hoping that by broadcasting him as this average Joe, you know, he said today, talking about this plan, quote, "I will not abandon you." Yeah. And I've heard from Republican strategists, it's going to get ugly soon on that front.
Yikes. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us for that. As we continue to report about this and the drama. That was Washington Post political reporter Amber Phillips. Now coming up, a leaked Trump administration memo details how homeless shelters can discriminate against trans women. Details on that in 10 minutes. So a copy of a new rule from the Trump administration that will allow homeless shelters to refuse transgender people has been leaked to the media. This is everywhere today. And this is like, if it already was bad, it gets worse. Okay. It contains instructions on how to spot transgender women to target them for discrimination. And this is what it says specifically. Shelter workers may use factors such as height, the presence, but not the absence of facial hair, the presence of an Adam's apple, and other physical characteristics, which when considered together, indicates a person's biological sex. If a homeless person appears too transgender for a homeless shelter, the shelter is allowed to ask them for proof of biological sex, which means they need possibly a government ID, but lack of government identification alone cannot be the sole basis for denying admittance on the basis of sex. What's your take on this memo that was leaked today, Ryan?
Yeah, I think Ashley Marie Preston said it best. You know, she tweeted about this when this news broke, and she said, "I just want to know which trans woman broke Trump's heart. This administration stays coming for us." And I honestly have to agree. I think the amount of energy, especially in the middle of a pandemic, the amount of energy that this administration puts on trans women and just trans individuals, it's really alarming to know that this is their focus. Their focus to continually show how much hate that they have for trans folks is absolutely disgusting. And it was interesting when you're reading this, right? And it kind of feels like they're trying to do something nice for trans folks when they're stating this is one of the rules. Evidence requested may not be unduly intrusive of privacy, such as private physical and anatomical evidence. So basically, that is barring shelters from forcing suspected transgender people to strip in front of them. So you're telling me, oh, you know, we're doing them, we don't want them to feel too uncomfortable where, you know, these shelters are making them strip. It's like, that's the bare minimum of them trying to at least kind of protect these people. But how do we know if that there's a shelter that is going to actually act on this? How do we know they're not going to take advantage of trans folks at a moment where they are looking for a place of not being out in the streets, not being killed on a daily basis? How do we know that they're not going to cross the line and do something like this?
It's the bare minimum. Like, why are we okay with the bare minimum, right? And it creates loopholes. When you don't establish things at a federal level and you say, well, it just depends on what you feel, like your religious beliefs, like they don't need to accept these individuals, but they can, and we would encourage it, but we're not going to put anything out there that it's something that needs to legally happen, right? And this is from March 2020, by the way, and you're talking about Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson, and we all know his background with LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah, I mean, he's described trans women as big hairy men and has said that trans women being homeless in shelters would impede the rights of cisgender women who are uncomfortable with being around them, basically.
Yeah, so here was his response when asked, like, what are transgender people supposed to do? Because where are they supposed to go? And here's what he had to say.
I think probably because a lot of them are youth, and their families don't welcome them. Well, my personal feeling is more consistent with what the Bible says, and that is that we should love everybody and leave the judging to God. What we have done is give them the ability to make determinations themselves, right, rather than have the federal government dictating what should be done. What I would encourage is that, you know, shelters have places set aside for an individual.
So he basically is like, okay, I'm offering a bit of a solution, but we can't force people to do that. So best of luck.
It's not really a solution if you look at the facts and the data. And according to the National Center for Transgender Equality, 29% of trans people live in poverty, and 1 in 5 trans people in the U.S. will be homeless at some point in their lifetimes. So with that type of information, tell me, what are you actually doing? What is this country actually doing to help them?
Yep. So it's important to know this stuff so we know who's handling all this and who we're voting for and putting in these places and positions of responsibility. All right, well, coming up, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany just revealed why law enforcement officials have removed their names from their uniforms. We're seeing this in Portland, Oregon right now. We have the clip next in What's Trending This Hour. We are back. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on Channel Q. And now coming up this hour, the Trevor Project is joining us to discuss the new 3-digit suicide prevention hotline that just got announced by the FCC. That's pretty huge. It's a game changer. Plus, peace and love. You know, some of us use that saying a lot. I do, I'll be honest. But there's another side to it. We're going to be talking about the propaganda around peace and love.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that conversation because it's a good one. Now let's get into some What's Trending This Hour because we got some juicy clips for you. President Trump today was asked about Jeffrey Epstein's former partner who's currently in prison, Ghislaine Maxwell, right now. And Trump has ties to them back in the day. Here was his response.
Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison, and so a lot of people want to know if she's going to turn in powerful people. And I know you've talked in the past about Prince Andrew, and you've criticized Bill Clinton's behavior. I'm wondering, do you feel that she's going to turn in powerful men? How do you see that working out?
I don't know. I haven't really been following it too much. I just wish her well, frankly. I've met her numerous times over the years, especially since I lived in Palm Beach, and I guess they lived in Palm Beach. But I wish her well, whatever it is. I don't know the situation with Prince Andrew. Just don't know. Not aware of it.
Simple and sweet. You know, he just wishes her well.
I wouldn't be rushing pedophiles. Well, but, you know, that's his choice.
Now, Trader Joe's will soon join many other companies that have recently announced changes to product packaging that has been criticized for being racist or offensive. 2 weeks ago, an online petition launched calling on the grocery store to remove the labels on some of its ethnic foods. So, for instance, the petition cited their packaging that said Trader Ming's on Chinese items, Arabian Joe's on Middle Eastern foods, and Trader Jose's on Mexican foods.
Wait, what? I've never seen that. And I feel like, you know, the Trader Joe's orange chicken, the Mandarin orange chicken is my jam. It really does what it needs to do. And I had no clue. I have to go look at the package now. Oh my God, this is wild.
Yeah, but they are changing that, so.
Yeah, but why would they even think that was okay in the first place? Wow.
The way we were, unfortunately.
Well, you know, before ever shopping at Trader Joe's, which I feel like I've only been shopping at Trader Joe's for about a year now.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was a crab shack because back at home we have a place called Joe's Crab Shack, and I thought it was the same thing. So I saw Joe's and I was like, oh, it's the same thing.
But just a ton of crab shacks.
I found that it was a grocery store, and my friends were like, you've never been to Trader Joe's, and it honestly has changed my life. But whoa, had no clue they had offensive items in their store. That's wild.
Yeah. Now, this is sketchy. A courier truck carrying COVID-19 samples has been hijacked in South Africa. The truck was transporting the specimens in Port Elizabeth in the country's Eastern Cape province when it was taken over by thieves at gunpoint. The truck has since been recovered, but the specimens are missing. That's according to local media reports. So there's COVID-19 specimens just floating around.
I mean, it's not like we're probably going to ever get them back at this point. So
I know, but then people could use them and then infect places. That's the whole point.
Well, yeah, that is a huge point. But how are we going to get it back without, like, starting a war or something? Like, that just feels intense. But be careful, I guess.
This is getting sketchy.
That's a weird piece of news.
That was What's Trending This Hour, but we have some stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Okay, so here's the tea report. You know, those pop culture stories that are trending right now. The Chicks, formerly known as Dixie Chicks, famously became blackballed in country music after they criticized George W. Bush in 2003 for the war in Iraq. But they actually have a, one of the members, Natalie Main, she actually had a change of heart saying Donald Trump has put some things in perspective. And today I might actually make out with George Bush. She actually took Andy Cohen on an upcoming episode of Watch What Happens Live. She maintains, though, that she didn't want to go to war and that weapons of mass destructions were a lie. But she says, yes, she would totally still make out with George Bush. So how hilarious is that? Change of heart. But let's move on, because I think this is the story that we really need to talk about. Nick Cannon is sitting down with a rabbi after making, you know, these anti-Semitic remarks. Days after these statements on his podcast, Nick Cannon is sitting down with Rabbi Abraham Cooper to discuss what happened. Here's a clip of that.
You know, I've been called many things. I've been canceled several times for being outspoken, sometimes even for my educational platform. But that one was a new one for me specifically, because I in no means ever had, I don't have a hatred towards any group of people, but specifically Jewish people, because I feel there is such a connection and kindred spirit to the Jewish community from, you know, and I'm like, this is definitely not the moment for me to be like, hey, Mike. Great-grandfather is Jewish, or, you know, my best friend. I'm not in that moment, but really, as someone who's studying theology and, you know, on a mission to receive a PhD in divinity, I connected with the Hebrew community.
So I didn't know that Nick Cannon was studying divinity.
Yeah.
What? So yeah, this is interesting. And I've been talking about this a bunch as well recently, even like not just on the air. And I think Nick just needs to know that associating himself with Louis Farrakhan was the issue here. No one was debating what he had said. It was the association. You're guilty by association. But
And I think it's publicly. I think here's the thing. I think people are going to like who they like. And if he likes his practices, and I mean, Louis Farrakhan has been around forever. I was talking to my mom and she even remembered when she was younger, the terrible rhetoric that he would say. And I think he will probably continue to be a reader or a follower of his. But I bet you publicly, he will never say a damn thing again. And that's what's trending in the Tea Report.
All right. Coming up, could words like peace and love actually be propaganda? We discuss if the words have lost their meaning next. So you've probably seen it on signs at protests and, of course, on your social media feed, peace and love. But those words also have deep roots in white supremacy and might be not helping the move towards social justice and equality. And we know a lot of personal growth people are into that too. I even say, you know, light and love. But let's talk about the other side of using these words right now. Dr. Rashay Richardson is back with us, an associate professor for Africana Studies and Research Center at Cornell University. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you all for having me.
So let's talk about the other side of using words like peace and love that not everyone is seeing or understanding when it comes to protests and what's happening right now.
Absolutely. I will just give full disclosure that peace and love is often a signature that I like to use, or a phrase that I like to use as part of my signature when signing off to my family or friends. And so these words actually have become something of a cliche. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people don't think about their deeper meanings. But the truth is that it is possible to weaponize them and to use them to repress very subversive movements and protests. And so we definitely have to be cautious in terms of, you know, how we insist on standards of peace and love. I mean, I definitely prefer peace as a person, and think that love, you know, is the best healer and unifier. But the reality is that things are all often much more complicated in the world. For instance, the terminology in the context of the George Floyd protests easily obscures the long history of Black protest that was very multifaceted. Like if we go back to the 19th century, to the antebellum era, there was the example of Black militancy under the abolitionist David Walker.
Right.
And yeah, we've had...
Oh. No, I was saying that's something that I genuinely really agree with in what you're saying. You know, I do think peace and love have become such buzzwords and has been used so much that they've practically lost their meanings, in my opinion. So I would love to know your perspective. How do we keep that from happening to movements like Black Lives Matter?
Well, I think the key is to understand that the toolbox for activism and political mobilizing has been very diverse and multifaceted over time. There's never been a one-size-fits-all model. And to homogenize movements in that way really negates their complexity. I think that these terms took on a particular and distinct meaning during the 1960s, during the anti-war movement and the movement for civil rights. And those contexts are always very relevant, but we can't lose sight of the need to nuance our understanding of what it will take to, you know, bring about positive and lasting solutions when we talk about these issues that we're facing.
Yeah, and this article really talks about identifying this type of language as manipulation, tactic. How can white people recognize that as they grow in this space of being an ally or even a co-conspirator, that they're not doing that?
Right. Well, I think that a lot of times this is going to require, you know, deeper introspection, reflection, and study. Dr. King, even when he talked about love, talked about it and thought about it in very nuanced and complicated ways so that
yes.
he understood a range of meanings of love. And so when people invoke him, they have to really come correct with that and understand that he also held people who were perpetrators of violence to a very high standard. And yes, the protests were expected to be nonviolent, but he certainly didn't sanction forms of state-sanctioned abuse against, you know, minorities.
Yeah, I guess what's the takeaway from this? What can we all hope for as we move forward?
I think the best thing is understanding that when we have, you know, this language, first of all, we have to get beyond these cosmetic kinds of terms and expectations to go deeper, to dig deeper, and realize that a part of the healing will also admitting where we're wounded and locating the wounds, because we don't stand a chance at healing if the real problems aren't addressed. And so a superficial Band-Aid application of love or peace is not going to erase the deep-seated violence and other forms of oppression that are entrenched in this society.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us as we navigate this conversation. Really powerful. And you just said it all so well.
Oh, thank you all. Thanks
yeah,
so much.
I love listening to you. No, I like literally could listen to you. Like obviously you teach. So I would just be like, can you be my professor, please? Dr. Rashe Richardson, again, is an associate professor for Africana Studies and at the Research Center for Cornell University. Now coming up, the FCC has announced a new 3-digit number for the suicide prevention hotline. This is really big news. And we have the Trevor Project joining us to discuss this latest development next. Months after announcing a proposal to implement a 3-digit suicide prevention hotline, the FCC has finally approved 988. It is here. This is really huge as mental health becomes, even more, I guess it's always been important, but it's being brought to the mainstream, I think, a bit more. We all know the importance of focusing on our mental health and that of our community. And I am so excited to have Sam Brinton joining us.
Ah!
They are the VP of Advocacy and Government Affairs at the Trevor Project. They were involved, one of the many advocacy groups, in making this happen. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a really important topic, and I'm really glad it's being covered in a variety of different mediums. And this is a really important way to reach a lot of folks about a really important conversation. So thanks for having me.
And let me tell you about Sam. Yeah. Sam can dress the house down. When I tell you, we would see Sam at the Trevor Project Galas here in Los Angeles. And when I tell you, Sam is everything. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my honor. I am sad that I don't get to be in more in person, right?
I
welcome to the age that we're working in. I think it was raised earlier, right? Like, it's, we need mental health conversations, but goodness gracious, I am literally now wearing my heels to the grocery store. Like, this is like, what else
love
do
you
I
for
do?
That. Love you. So let's talk about how this all happened. Like, how long were you working on this project?
So we've been working on this project for over 2 years. So in 2018, we worked with Senator Orrin Hatch to pass the National Suicide Hotline Improvement Act. So that was 2 years ago. A strong Republican from Utah saw the rising rates of suicide and said, we need to make this easy. We need to make this simple, and we need to improve a system that's there. And the Trevor Project said, yes, we really, really do. The National Lifeline's doing great work, but it's not serving everyone to the best of its abilities, and let's make that happen. So we started a process with the FCC of, after unanimous passage of that act back in 2018, started work with the FCC. And I'm really excited to say that, yeah, just this week, we were finally able, after a 2-year process, to come to the agreement that this is a number that will serve people and break down stigma. I think I want to make sure we get into that part of the conversation, but like 988 takes us away from the idea of this is something that only bad or sick people do, right? Like, we all know 911. We all call it. Like, we see our neighbor maybe, you know, clutching their chest with a heart attack. Oh, call 911. But we treat people who are calling in moments of crisis as like bad. Mm-hmm. And that's not helpful. So this is going to really destigmatize.
And you know, the Trevor Project is such a great resource for so many LGBTQIA plus mm-hmm. youth in crisis. How are you all amplifying what you already do and this new hotline? Like, should it be looked at as two separate resources?
That's such an important question. So the really exciting part about this work is that although it is totally separate, you are spot on, right? Two different projects, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which will in 2 years be at 988, right? And the Trevor Lifeline. Trevor does text, chat, you know, Lifeline, a variety of different services, but specifically targeted at serving LGBTQ youth. As you mentioned, this new service, by the order of Congress, is going to have to offer specialized services for LGBTQ youth. So it's like there's a variety of different ways that's going to happen. Two important ones that I want to make sure that we're covering because it's really, really for our community. First is every single person who answers a call on the National Lifeline will be trained on LGBT competency so that no matter where you are, and if you're not calling Trevor, right? Let's say you're a young person and you hear 988 first, great. You should be served just as well as we ever can. But the really exciting part is that it is looking like we will be able to do what is called integrated voice response. And you're like, this is a lot of words.
Yeah, I know. What does that mean?
The important part is dial a specific number after, and you'll be transferred to groups like the Trevor Project. So right now we have the Veterans Crisis Line. Makes sense. Like, this all makes sense to everybody involved. Like, if you're a veteran, you deserve specialized services. Why? Because a person talking to you isn't going to be as trained in the specific risks that you're facing.
Again, we're talking to Sam Brinton from the Trevor Project. So this is a game changer. How would it work if I call the number?
Oh, such a good question. So do not call 988. Yes. Do not call 988 yet. Just don't do it yet, because the carriers have up to 2 years to transfer calls. Speaking as a nuclear engineer, did not realize how old the technology of some of these numbers are.
Yeah.
That transferring those numbers takes time. So in 2 years, hopefully before, but at minimum in 2 years, all of the calls that go to 988 will go to the Lifeline. Right now, if you are in crisis and you are, for example, maybe not wanting to call the Trevor Project, I hope you do, but if you want to call someone else, you would call 1-800-873-TALK, right? So like, you would get a specific, the long 10-digit number. I'm amazed I remembered that. I'm a millennial, I can't remember phone numbers. I can't remember my husband's phone number. So like that, I remember that, go Sam. But if you need that service, go there. Don't call 988 yet, because you won't get service. And if you're in crisis, that's going to be awful.
Yeah.
You do not want to be calling in crisis to a number that doesn't work. Yep.
Well, thank you for all your hard work on this. This is just incredible.
I'm so proud of y'all. This is incredible.
Yeah. It's so needed. So thanks again. That was Sam Brinton. They are the VP of Advocacy and Government Affairs at the Trevor Project. You're always a pleasure. We love you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, coming up, did Fox News host Tucker Carlson put a reporter's life in danger on his show last night? We play that clip coming up in 10 minutes. Fox News host Tucker Carlson continues to be a problematic bully. What did he do this time, you might be asking or wondering? Well, he's accusing the New York Times of endangering him and his family by revealing where they live in an upcoming story. They haven't done this yet, okay? But he's saying they were going to do it. And so here's his response.
editors there know exactly what will happen to my family when it does run. I called them today and I told them, but they didn't care. They hate my politics. They want this show off the air. If one of my children gets hurt because of a story they wrote, they won't consider it collateral damage. They know it's the whole point of the exercise, to inflict pain on our family, to terrorize us, to control what we say. That's the kind of people they are. They'll deny this, of course. They'll claim it's just journalism, just the facts. Really? So how would Murray Carpenter and his photographer Tristan Spinsky feel if we told you where they live, if we put pictures of their homes on the air? What if we publicized the home address of every one of the soulless robot editors at The New York Times who assigned and managed this incitement to violence against my family?
So basically, he was giving an opening to his own Twitter bullying army to do the same for this reporter. And after this report that he did, you know, all these conservative Twitter accounts started publicly posting the address and personal information of the reporter that Carlson identified as the story's writer. And many encouraged people to harass the reporter as well. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, obviously, two wrongs don't make a right. I don't even think that the New York Times was going to reveal his address. And they even said after in a statement that they weren't going to do this.
Yeah. And they also said that he knew that before he went on air and said that. I think it is aggressive what he just did and what he's doing. But honestly, Tucker Carlson deserves every little bit that he gets. I mean, this guy is completely awful. He amplifies white supremacy messaging and just had to fire his former head writer, Blake Neff, for literal white supremacy from tweets and homophobic and misogyny that was all up and down his Twitter. He just had to fire him. This guy should not be on television. I think it is important to obviously hear the other side, but what's the line? Where do we put our foot down and hold folks accountable? Tucker Carlson is a menace to society and he should not have a platform in this way.
Yeah, and he's blaming the left, New York Times, for always calling him out because they don't want him to speak the truth, which I find completely crazy.
No, he's speaking his truth, but guess what? When you're speaking, you have a platform, you have a mic, there's consequences to whatever you have to say.
Yeah, so let's also be clear, him putting the New York Times and the left in the same sentence as Antifa and what they did, this extremist group, is just like wrong also, because that continues to propagate this message that like, oh, the left and anyone who supports New York Times are going to do the same to him,
but
which is not true.
We learned that Antifa wasn't a real thing. I mean, we've had people on.
It is a movement. No, it is a movement. It is a movement.
It's not an actual group of people.
But it's also, I mean, like that could be debated, but it's also like this is doesn't represent what you could say, like the liberal like outlook on things. It's an extremist group.
I think it's
group.
Two separate things.
Yeah, exactly. But then it gets put into the same basket as liberals. So that's the issue, the Democrats. So that said, also remember, Ryan, this is also the same day that a sexual harassment lawsuit was thrown, including Tucker Carlson at Fox News. So like that, you know, there's a lot going on for Tucker Carlson, and to act like he's all innocent and like he has the right to have, yeah, this platform, which he does. He has the right, but doesn't mean he should have the platform. So we were thinking or wondering if it was legal to even reveal someone's address. And so this is from Storyful, who said, technically it is within one's legal rights to find someone's publicly available information and repost it online. Doxing can also be considered illegal if the information is posted with the intent of harassing the victim, intimidating them, invading their privacy, or having them insulted. So you could say like he is a degree separated from the illegal part, because he basically put this reporter's face out there and said like, let's see if he would like us doing this to him. And lo and behold, his followers did that. So where's the responsibility there? Something to think about. Now coming up, the ACLU is suing to free Michael Cohen so he can deal a blow to Trump. Find out what info he has in his back pocket next in What's Trending This Hour. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on Channel Q. And we have Dr. James Simmons joining us this hour to get into how your smartphone might be transmitting COVID-19 to you and how to deal with that, as well as this whole mask situation. I guess there's news coming out that a certain type of mask might not work the way we thought it would. And stay tuned for that. I love getting Dr. James on the show. He's always the best. Yeah, all great. Right. Let's get into some of what's trending this hour, though. A lot of stuff going on. Trump campaign communications director Tim Murdaugh tried to blame Obama. I feel like the administration has been doing this a lot for Trump's coronavirus response today on CNN.
If people were saying don't wear masks because medical professionals will need them and there might be a shortage, it's because the national stockpile had been depleted. But that's when the president enlisted the role of the private sector and got the whole of America into the production of masks and other PPE, and I would point out ventilators. You remember at the beginning of this entire process, we heard an awful lot out of New York and California and other states about what they perceived to be a looming shortage of ventilators. That shortage never materialized because the president strategically
Obama left 19,000 ventilators in a plan. You know, Tim, Obama left 19,000 ventilators in a plan, so you're lying. And you're talking like it's 2017. It's 2020, sir. It is 2020. It has been almost 4 years.
Hold on a second. Let's talk about this.
You know, shout out to this CNN anchor, Brianna Kilar, who just really handles this amazingly as she was doing this interview and just calling him out on his stuff and just... And so, you know, didn't even like have any sort of over emotion. She was just saying it like it was. Just like, yes. Answer my question.
She was holding him accountable. Like, yeah. I think that's one thing that CNN anchors do. Like, they don't allow you just to come on their platform and just lie like, you know, other platforms.
Of course. Yeah, she does a great job. So good on her for holding down the fort with that one. Now, the truth is coming out. The ACLU and a law firm representing Michael Cohen filed a lawsuit yesterday seeking the release of Donald Trump's former personal attorney from prison and his return to home confinement. You know, it's funny because we saw this and we were like dragging Michael Cohen, but there was a reason why he was being brought to court or being brought back to be arrested. And it's because it seems like he has this tell-all book about Trump. And they wanted to release it before the November election. And so they actually tried to get him back behind bars to make sure this wouldn't come out. That's why the ACLU is getting involved.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the book reportedly describes the president's pointedly anti-Semitic remarks and virulently racist remarks against such Black leaders as President Barack Obama and Nelson Mandela, neither of whom Trump viewed as real leaders or as worthy of respect by virtue of their race. This is according to that filing and this lawsuit.
Trump hates Obama so much. It's like so sad because he knows he's never going to have the type of legacy that Obama or Nelson Mandela ever has. And like, it's just embarrassing that he really hates him so much. It's like, dude, get over it. Get a grip.
Yeah, I can't imagine what conversations are happening behind the scenes. Can't imagine. And once again, will this make a difference if this book comes out? Look at Mary Trump's book. Will that make a difference? But at least let's see it. Let's get that book out there. Now, as protests continue in Portland, Oregon, and many are questioning the government sending the military in, Press Secretary Kelly McEnany justified why federal agents are not identifying themselves to demonstrators.
Yes. Thank you, Kelly. Just going back to the Portland situation, what is sort of the policy justification for federal officers not identifying their agency and their arrest authority when they take a protester into custody?
So I've been told by DHS that there is insignia indicating that they're law enforcement. They, in the case you're referencing, did identify themselves to the individual being obtained, but that they don't identify themselves to crowds because it would put them at great risk. And I think you can see that, as I noted, when they're sticking their hands into boards left out by some of the rioters.
Once again, it's like a she said, they said type of situation here. And who do we trust? That is the big question.
No one. I don't trust anyone.
That was some what's trending this hour. We're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Here are some pop culture stories that are trending right now. Grey's Anatomy just released, I guess, a statement saying that they're going to have a coronavirus pandemic storyline in season 17. They said every year we have doctors come and tell us their stories, and usually they're telling their funniest or craziest stories. This year it felt like it has felt more like therapy. the doctors come in and we're the first people we're they're talking to about these type of experiences they're having. They're literally shaking and trying not to cry. They're pale and they're talking about it as war, a war that they were not trained for. And so this is actually really exciting to know, like, this is, and that came from Krista Vernoff. She's the long-running medical dramas executive producer, and she revealed this news. So I cannot wait for that. That's going to be even more emotional. I mean, Grey's Anatomy makes me cry already.
But I know.
Let's move on to Tiffany Haddish. She has a new look. She shaved off all of her hair. She chopped off of all of her hair last week and making plenty of headlines in the process. Basically, she shared a confident Instagram selfie of her clean shaved head saying, "Just loving my new look. Thought I'd share it with y'all. The best part is when water hits my head, it feels like kisses from God. Hashtag she ready for more of God's love."
Wow, so, yeah, she really shaved it. It wasn't just like a little cut. It's like a complete
shave. Bald. She's completely bald and she looks gorgeous. And those are the pop culture stories that are trending right now.
Yeah, I couldn't do that because I have a little bump on my head. I don't know if you've ever seen that, Ryan. It's not appealing or attractive.
I think so. I'm gonna skip that. Would be able to rock it. You would.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate you. All right, now coming up, new information suggests this one mask might actually be putting others at risk. More on that next in 10 minutes. We're going to talk about masks right now because there's still some questions that we have, because one type of mask called the valve mask, we've seen it, you've definitely seen it, is now under fire for not protecting you like they should. And it brings up the question whether they should be used at all. And back with us is Dr. James Simmons. You know him, of course, as one of the hosts of Drop the Subject with Ali. Welcome back.
Nice. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, always. We love having you. So what is the valve mask and how is it actually not helping people wear them? And why are we only finding this out now?
Well, it's interesting because there's a lot of folks in healthcare who have been sort of screaming and shouting about this from early on. But as is happening a lot in our country these days, trained medical professionals, physician, nursing, respiratory therapists, otherwise, are not necessarily being listened to by everyone. I'm sure you guys may or may not have talked about that before. But what happens with these N95 masks, and these are a part of an N95 mask. And so when you have these masks, and these N95 masks are much, much better than the cloth masks that you see, or even the kind of the thin paper ones, at protecting you from inhaling particles that may have COVID-19, or almost more importantly, projecting them out. So laughing, talking, coughing, sneezing, et cetera. Yeah. When you have an N95 mask on, it's handling, ready, about 95% of those particles from getting in or out. So imagine you have this great mask, it works amazing, but then you have a valve on it. Well, that valve only has a one-way filter. So it's preventing particles from coming in, you from breathing them in, but it's actually specifically designed to make breathing out and getting the particles out of you and from the mask, it's designed to get them out and actually push them away from you.
Doesn't sound good.
I mean, but this question's for my Karens, though. You know, I want to know, what are the benefits of these type of masks? Because I know a lot of people complain and say, like, they can't breathe, and this mask helps them breathe. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I love how you said my Karens, by the way. Are you owning Karens now?
Oh, for
are
sure.
You like,
for
you
sure.
Like, you and Karens are down. You guys are cool.
I'm here to support all the Karens in the world.
He's pimping out the Karens. He has a harem of Karens.
A harem of Karens. So you're right. That's actually the very specific reason why some people wear these masks, is because they do make it easier to breathe. Unfortunately, the issue is it's not really doing much of anything. So it is, I guess I will say this, it is protecting you when you inhale, for sure. So it's preventing a lot of those particles from coming into you. But those particles coming out, in some of those masks, it's actually helping propel particles out from you. So we know, you know, we say stay 6 feet away, because that's about as far as droplet particles go, right? Well, we also know some of the newer research is saying that some of COVID-19, depending on the person's viral load, there's lots of factors that can live in smaller aerosolized particles for a little bit longer, right? So it's kind of a merging between droplet and aerosol. Well, these masks with the valve on them are designed to push those aerosol particles out, like away from you, and make it easier for you to exhale in the mask.
So we're talking to Dr. James Simmons again about these valve masks you've been seeing, the N95 masks that people have been boasting about. Everyone wants to get their hand on one. Of course, we've been making sure that the frontline workers have them. So I guess, are people going to start going away from that, including healthcare workers?
Yeah, we don't routinely wear these with the valves, at least in the institutions where I work. There are I want to be sure that the listeners understand the difference. Not all N95 masks have these valves, but all the masks with valves are N95s. If that makes sense.
Got
so
it.
You can get an N95 mask, and those are great. We're still telling people right now, please try to reserve those as much as possible for healthcare providers. But if you have a lot of people who do construction or work with like buzzsaws and things like that, where there's lots of dust around, they have old N95 sitting around anyway. If you have those, fine, use them. They're great. Purchasing new N95s, we're still trying to reserve for healthcare providers. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased. But definitely, if you've got one of those sitting around with a valve on it, it may be protecting you, but it actually could be doing worse for other people, for grandma at the grocery store who's also looking at that box of Frosted Flakes, right? It's just propelling droplet particles and aerosolized particles all over grandma. It's not helping anything.
So I would love to get your reaction. You know, yesterday, actually, Donald Trump, our president, he tweeted, many people say that it's patriotic to wear a face mask when you can't socially distance. There's nobody more patriotic than me, your favorite president. And that tweet included a photo of him finally wearing a mask. As a healthcare professional, what do you have to say about that? What was your reaction?
I think there was another part of that tweet, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, where he still called it the invisible China virus.
He did. But I wanted to leave that hateful rhetoric out of it.
I had a very, very strong reaction about that. I actually think this is really good. So, you know, we've been advocating for Trump to wear a mask for a really long time because there are, whether we like it or not, there are a certain sect of people out there who will only do what he tells them to do. And even if that's only 10% of his followers or of his people who stand Donald Trump, great. That means it's 10% more of people who are wearing masks. And so I'm sorry it took him this long, but I'm all for it.
We'll see if it makes a difference. All right, Dr. James Simmons is going to hang with us because after this, we're going to be talking about cell phones and could your cell phone actually be spreading COVID-19? We're going to finally debunk that theory next. So we've talked about this before, but I think people are still very confused, Ryan. If your phone could transmit COVID-19 everywhere you go, is it like your third hand? That's the question.
I mean, right.
Dr. James Simmons, host of Drop the Subject with Ali, is back with us. So let's get into this, Dr. James. Is it possible for your phone to spread COVID-19? What should we be doing here?
Well, okay, so this topic is a little bit more nuanced than I think some people realize. So ultimately, you have to say yes, bottom line, you could probably get COVID-19 from your phone, but there are some very, very specific things that would have to happen.
Okay.
So remember that viruses need a host to live in. Like viruses aren't just like, I've been using this word lately, nimbly pimbly. Viruses aren't just nimbly pimbly out there just like hanging out on a surface.
What a word choice.
Do you like that? Right?
I liked it.
It's like my old man word, nimbly pimbly. So viruses aren't just hanging out nimbly pimbly on your phone for hours at a time just waiting to infect you. Okay, that's not how it works. Viruses need a host to live. And even though we find evidence that COVID-19 can live on surfaces for a long time, it is part of the virus. Meaning it is not a complete intact virus that can then cause an infection on you. We're literally finding little traces of the virus, okay? Well, you have to have a complete virus to then cause infection in you. So if, let's say, someone sneezes on a countertop, they have a really high viral load of COVID-19. They sneeze all over this countertop. You immediately put your phone then right where they sneezed and then grabbed your phone. And then with the same hand that you grabbed your phone, you touched your eye, right? Or like where put your phone up to your mouth and talk to the speakerphone and your phone touched your mouth, something like that. Mm. That is a way that you could get a route of transmission. Does that make sense? So that is not very likely to happen. it is very, there is extremely low likelihood that you will have contract COVID-19 from your phone having touched something else or whatever. So some rules of thumb just to make sure that it doesn't happen for you. Keep hand sanitizer with you and use your hand sanitizer a lot, right? Don't let other people touch your phone. That's really a big, okay, probably the biggest key. And then don't just go nimbly pimbly setting your phone down wherever, right? So if you're at the grocery store, don't put your phone in the grocery store cart.
Like, I've done that before.
Exactly. Don't put it in the cart and then pick it up and like text, and then you rub your eyeball, not thinking, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. Maybe there was something on the cart that got on my phone, that got on my hand, and now I put it in my eye. Like, you know, as long as you're being smart.
Right. And I think that's what it takes. Right.
I have a question. Dr. James Simmons is with us as we talk about phones and COVID-19. How long does it take? Like, if I do have something on my phone, how long would it be able to live there?
Very good question. We don't have a specific answer to. Okay. We'll find traces of the virus for a couple days on your phone. But again, this is traces, part of the virus. So the analogy I like to use is that, let's say you roll up on a driveway and you see that there are two tires and a steering wheel and a seatbelt. You can pretty much surmise that there was a car there at some point in time, but you can't drive away in it. It's not a complete car, right? So there's evidence that the virus is there and on your phone, but it's not a complete virus that is then going to cause an infection in you.
So what else should we be sanitizing? Because it feels like our shoes are next.
Oh, ask any nurse or physician or whoever that works at the hospital. Your shoes stay outside. I know people who won't even put their shoes in their car. Like, the second they walk out of the hospital, they take their shoes off. There's this different bag. That bag goes in, like, either in a locker or they put it inside of a different compartment in their trunk. Like, yes, your shoes carry around a lot. But it's very specifically in terms of COVID-19, we don't really have evidence that people are picking up COVID-19 on the ground, on their shoes, bringing it into their house, and then that is a route of transmission. This is a respiratory, at least the way that this virus is transmitted is a respiratory, but by far.
All right. So just as we wrap things up, how would you clean your phone? Like, I've been putting my hand sanitizer on a paper towel and then like wiping my phone with it. And then I tried to buy one of those cases that will do the UV light with it.
Uh-huh.
Does that work? Does all that work?
So if you, UV light does actually work to kill the virus on inanimate objects. Obviously you can't, the amount of UV radiation required to kill the virus can never be used on a human being. It would kill that human being. But if you get one of those UV ones and they work well, you can totally do that. So just some good old alcohol wipes is fine. Like the wipies that you have in your house, like Windex, things like that. Use it to wipe your phone down. The key is to let it dry. And then, if you're in a pinch, if your hand sanitizer will work great, particularly any product that you have that has that magic number of at least 60% alcohol in it will do the trick.
But how often? Every day, like once or twice a day, every hour?
It really depends on, so like we're all hanging out at home, right? We're all quarantined. So if you're not leaving your house, you don't need to clean your phone every day for sure. But I probably clean my phone. I mean, I'm in the hospital, so that's a different environment. But when I'm at the hospital, I clean my phone 6-7 times while I'm there and then as I'm leaving, because I don't want that phone. Because the problem is there's lots of other stuff, not just COVID, but there's lots of other crap that can live for longer on your phone, and then you don't want to bring it in your car and X, Y, and Z.
You know, I could hear about these conversations all the time, and I'm like always asking the same question. It's like, how many times do we need to remember? All right. Dr. James Simmons, we love having you here. Always informative and helpful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow, that was a nice deep voice.
You can also
listen to him on Drop the Subject with Ali. Now coming up, what happened when this student decided to have an impromptu concert? That's next in our Yaz Queen of the Day. We're wrapping up the show with our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
So an antique store in Massachusetts has gifted this student with a piano after an impromptu performance of Journey's Don't Stop Believin'. Love that song.
Oh my God, I do too. It's like a, obviously, I feel like I first came, like I first heard that song on Glee. Is that bad?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. I mean, that's what it was. But I really, really like that show in all forms. Whoever's covering it, I feel like there's not a bad cover of it. And it's a classic wedding song, especially white weddings.
And now after that video of 23-year-old John Thomas Archer went viral, the founder of the store called Remarkable Cleanouts in Norwood, Massachusetts, tracked him down to give him an actual Steinway model piano. Okay. And Archer is a graphic design student at Northeastern University and a self-taught musician. So that's a beautiful thing to do for someone. I mean, that piano costs a lot of money.
Oh, for sure. And the piano he was playing was a little touch out of tune. But, you know, he just wanted to play. He felt it in his fingertips that he wanted to play. So he did a phenomenal job and sounded really good. And I love this. I love that this moment where music continues to bring people together. It's kind of like that couple that would play their violin and cello on their in their neighborhood and have their neighbors watch. It brings people together. You can't say it doesn't.
You know what also helps to de-stress and brings people together? Screaming.
Okay.
So actually, it's been shown that screaming helps relieve stress and anxiety, just like letting it all out. And the Tourism Board of Iceland is taking advantage of that and creating a really unique campaign to get the word out about Iceland. So they're offering this strange but fulfilling way to bring people together right now.
Okay.
If you go to lookslikeyouneediceland.com, they're basically encouraging people from around the world to record their yells of frustration so that they can be broadcast into the wide open Icelandic wilderness.
Oh, so they don't have to travel to Iceland. They can just like play it on a loudspeaker there.
Yeah, so they basically, you go to the site, you record your scream, you leave that experience feeling good, and then they're going to broadcast that, and you can watch your scream being broadcast out to the beautiful environment of Iceland.
Does anyone live there? Because that's noise complaints that I would be calling the police on, being like, can someone shut down these screamings? It's like the fireworks.
It's in the middle of nowhere, Ryan.
Oh, but
it's like,
you know
when you're going somewhere in the mountains and you scream and you just like let it out.
Yeah, but there's native people that probably live in the middle of nowhere. You just never know who lives there. It's very disruptive, but I like this. I love a good scream, to be honest.
It's a creative way to market Iceland. That's all I could say, whoever did this. Okay, so check it out. LooksLikeYouneediceland.com. I thought it was pretty funny.
It is.
And that does it for today's show. But we will be back tomorrow, same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. We're going to be talking about this big idea that some mayors have to fight COVID-19 and the recession. It's all about local officials now because we can't rely on federal government. Plus, have you noticed you smell weird lately? Is this happening to you, Ryan?
Oh, my God. No, Sharon, but it's happening to you. You're always asking, do you smell?
I actually do smell my armpits sometimes. That's true.
Yeah, deodorant.
Because I want to make sure.
Not that vegan crap. You need deodorant.
Wait, I actually found amazing natural deodorant. I'll be talking about it tomorrow.
All right.
But there's actually a reason why this is happening, and it could be because of quarantine.
Smelling like grass.
Talk about that on tomorrow's show. And also, if you miss any of our show, we post everything as a podcast. Just go to the radio.com app and search Let's Go There. Subscribe. Be part of our podcast, man. Will ya? Well, we are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.